Show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Here we go. This program is live, and yeah, I was a minute or so late. Don't ask. All right. Okay. I'll tell you. I had a mouthful of the new Lay's sausage biscuit and gravy potato chips. I didn't realize the time was sneaking up on me, and it was... You didn't want that. You didn't even want the sound effect just now. But that's the fact. Because, yes, my Odyssean quest for the fourth new flavor has been completed. I'd searched all over, and then there it was. One last lonely bag at my local Wiggle and Pig. And I gotta say, they are the best of the four. California truffle oil potato chips come in second. Reuben, and as noted previously, for the love of God, stay away from the Greek town Euro. I don't know what they did to come up with that flavor combination, but they should not ought have done it. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Yes, this is the Horn. It is, in fact, Titanic Tuesday. Oh, yes, it is. Titanic Tuesday. It is. And, of course, this is a full multimedia madcap extravaganza. We've got a nice gathering begun in the chat room. Thank you very kindly. Jeremy in Vermont letting me know loud and clear on TuneIn. Appreciate it. And, yeah, the class is in session. And a ring of the Red Bluff cowbell for Anatole and Jeremy and Tim from L.A. And, of course, all capably moderated in the chat room. Don't cross him. He has a lightsaber. Third stage guild navigator, Sparky, who has folded space to become Man Cave this evening. Yes, yes, indeed. So there's that. You get there by going to headonradionetwork.com and clicking on chat room. While you're over there, maybe you'd like to click on contribute. That's where the PayPal interface is, all that business about who you work for and what the address is and what time you leave for work every morning. You can leave that stuff blank. It's just about getting to the next screen. And we try to raise $200 every evening to keep the bills paid. And, well, frankly, it's the beginning of the month, so it would be nice to finally wipe out the last of July. It just works that way. We try to raise $200 every evening. And thank you very kindly to Roger up in Humboldt for taking care of have a show on me this evening, which means that we're actually working on Thursday. I don't know if we've ever had a two-day. Yeah, we've had a couple of days cushion before, yeah. But it's awfully nice to be able to do that. And Jim in Louisiana Stan, who says he is contemplating becoming Jim from Nevada Stan, has gotten us started. So we've only got $155 to go in the evening's fundraising goal. Now, a gentle reminder before we get started on Titanic Tuesday, we have an equipment fundraiser going on. And I know this has got to be a pain in the ass for everybody, but between just keeping this on the air and then me saying, hey, let's buy some new stuff. But for those of you who didn't catch the program last night, you might be interested in knowing, I've had some conversations with Kathy Malloy in conjunction with Mike, and they would like for me on occasion, when they need to be away from the studio in the foothills of the North Georgia mountains, they'd like for me to be able to guest host, and I'd love to do that. The only problem being it takes about $4,500 worth of new hardware, one of which is a profanity delay, and the other of which is a gizmo to get the signal from me to the people who send Mike's program out to the wider world, terrestrial radio audiences and whatnot. Those two items are about $4,500. It's actually the quote I got. It's a little more than $4,500, but we're not going to sweat that, because the $4,500 is a pretty heroic amount anyway. And so there it is. I mentioned it for the first time last night, as did Mike on his program. And I am proud to say that between the Horn Family Commune Congregation and the Truth Seekers, among whom there is some significant overlap. No, Tim, I don't need a compressor. We have a compressor. It's attached to the power washer. No. Different compressor. No, we've got a compressor. There's plenty of compression on the microphone. That's why you don't hear a whole bunch of the carrying on and hooting and hollering that goes on in the rest of the fabulous Kincaid Mansion here in almost level West by God, Virginia, Stan. There's also a limiter. Yeah, see? Yeah. Anyway, we're getting there. And we are up to between the Horn Family Commune Congregation and the Truth Seekers, we are up to $1,400 in that effort. And so I think we've got a fighting chance. If we could be done by the end of this week. And so if you want to help with the evening's fundraising, that's great. But if you'd like to kick in on the equipment fund, well, do the PayPal thing and just send me a note that says equipment fund with it. And there are a lot of people to thank, and I've tried to thank each and every one via email. And I hope I didn't miss anybody. But thanks go out to Vernon and to Richard and to Chris in Germany. Chris said, "What a wonderful idea." And I think it is. Thanks also going out to Cindy in the Great Northwest. And Carmen. Thank you, Carmen. I think we're, like I said, we've got a fighting chance. And happy birthday going out to our buddy Scott in Sweden. I hope, I think it's taking into account time zones and such, so it would actually be tomorrow, but it's today there. So happy birthday. Happy birthday, Scott. Many happy returns. Maybe have can you make a cake out of Sirstroning? You'll have to go back in the archives to find the great the great Sirstroming episode. We walked way out into the acre before we opened that, and glad we were. Not so happy the neighbors, though. But by God, we got through it. Sirstroming makes lutefisk seem like rose water. Mm-hmm. So that's all out of the way, except for the mailing address. If you want to participate in the equipment fund via the U.S. mail or in the ordinary funding of the Horn via the U.S. mail, checks and money orders made payable to the Horn, not to Bob Kincaid, can be sent to the Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEY, WV 25801. Okay? And hopefully we'll make some progress, get the fundraising out of the way, and keep on rolling. It is, as I noted, Titanic Tuesday on the horn. Okay, I'm sorry. We're not done. Tech question from Tim. Phone lines too, or will you go virtual? Well, no, we'll use the same two phone lines we've got here. And I have a feeling they'll probably be quite busy, really. At least I hope they will. But we'll have fun, one way or the other. And it would be a real pleasure to get to talk with the greater truth seeker community. By the way, I had a very, very kind note in regard to the equipment fundraiser from our good friend Harry over in Balmer. And he said, I too think the new equipment proposal is a wonderful idea. He said, since I have no money, I guess my endorsement doesn't mean very much. It means a ton. Quit that, Harry. I mean, that's why this community operates the way it does. People support people. This isn't capitalism. This isn't some effort to make me an overnight sensation after 10 years, and suddenly where I suddenly find myself broadcasting live from a Gulfstream 5 and flying on my way to an all boys vacation in the Dominican Republic with a purloined bottle of Viagra in my pocket, a la the oxymoron, you know, Flush Flemball. No, this is a community that takes care of its own, and so consequently, and I mean that in every sense of the word. You know, our dear friend Bill, Mr. Stress Miller, had a couple extra years of life, or a year or more of extra of life, that was quality, because members of the Horn community reached out to make sure that he got medical help when he desperately needed it. And more than that has happened here. People have become lifelong friends through this community. So don't say just because you're not sending cash doesn't mean you have nothing to contribute, because that's simply not true. Harry continues and says, in part because I was so glad when 6 p.m. rolled around this Monday night after a weekend I spent mostly, you know, depressed, I couldn't help but be excited for you about the possibility of your filling in for Mike Malloy, even though it requires some additional equipment. By way of encouraging others to participate in the equipment fundraiser, Harry says, it seems to me that this new equipment project is a huge leap forward. And since you already have the long experience and expert skill as a radio host, the transition for you, as opposed to the print journalists or other people who are sometimes given terrestrial radio programs, will be relatively easy. Moreover, at least in my humble opinion, Harry continues, you deserve a larger audience, even if it is still a relatively select audience of progressive-minded listeners. Finally, Harry says, I hope, although I'm perhaps totally naive, I don't think so, I hope, he says, that the Horn family will also realize that this equipment means a way for you to expand your audience, possibly even beyond or parallel to Mike. That is, you're not just asking to replace old equipment, you're expanding the ability to have other broadcast slots. The loyal Horn family commune congregation, Harry says in closing, would also benefit because everyone would be a little less worried about the future of the Horn itself. The problem of callers not being able to say the 7:30 words or the equivalent on your program is a minor inconvenience compared to the potential benefits. So thank you, Harry. Thank you very kindly for that kind and encouraging vote of confidence. Titanic Tuesday. It really is here. You may recall that we named Titanic Tuesday after, well, something that our buddy Jim heard one morning a while back, years ago now, on the terrestrial radio over in America's fifth smallest radio market, Beckley, West Virginia. I think it is. I'm not sure. I don't know. But it occurred when the master of monotone, a guy named Steve, took a call there. He could go hours and hours and days on end without getting a call, but every now and then one of his mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing faithful would take pity on him and save the rest of the audience from having the day's Beckley fish wrap read to them in a monotone that could drive an insomniac into a catatonic stupor. One of the faithful called him and said, "Steve, how come it is you reckon that there are seashells in the rocks in West Virginia? We ain't nowhere near the ocean." To which Steve, who once declared that the New River flows south, replied, "Well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates."
Mm-hmm. Yep.
No word yet on the movement of that those tiny little spoons you use for 1 minute soft boiled eggs. No. So that's where the phrase comes from, and as such, it is a celebration. Titanic Tuesday is of thinking in the right wing world. Sometimes funny, sometimes outrageous, and sometimes sinister. But Titanic, in every sense of the word, especially the obliviously heading toward a freaking iceberg sense of the word, in each and every case. The only problem with Titanic Tuesday is sometimes one gets, by the way, a little note coming from Carol. Harry, I can go 5 minutes sometimes without saying the F word. But I don't like it. Exactly. And it's all just learning to behave. Right. And that's what the profanity delay is for. You see, that's the irony of all of this. Way back when Air America fell apart, and it fell apart spectacularly, a lot of us were truly bereft because 1 minute Mike was there and the next minute, gone. And then through sheer determination, they decided that they were going to continue on independently. The only problem being, equipment. So most of that they rounded up. But they did not have a profanity delay. That's, like I said, this is where the irony comes in, because, well, we did. We got this whole thing started on the premise that one of these days we'll get picked up by terrestrial radio. But by the time the whole Air America collapse came along, most of us had come to the conclusion that was not going to happen. So I packed up the profanity delay and shipped it off to Mike and Kathy so that they could get back on the real radio. And thus, the irony. So now between the super duper high pollutant codec that we have to get, and then the other parts of the profanity delay, and that's a total, those two pieces of equipment, which probably together don't weigh 10 pounds. Not that they sell technology by the pound or anything, but that's where that's the $4,500. Now, the thing about Titanic Tuesday is that sometimes one is vexed, challenged, to figure out how to dive into it, because you don't necessarily want to go right into the bummers, but at the same time, you don't want to be, well, vacuous. So I decided to go with stupid, because it sets the scene. Because nothing says right wing like an act of manifest stupidity. Well, this story, really has it all. The hubris of the ignorant, the hateful of the bigoted, and of course the crankiness of old white people. It comes, of all places, from IHOP. Nowhere is safe anymore. Now, granted, it can get a little chaotic at the International House o' Pancakes, or as we named the one over in Beckley after a particularly uninspiring meal, intentional hair on pancakes, because there was, and we presumed it to be intentional, not unintentional. It worked, IHOP, intentional hair on pancakes, okay? There, in real time and later on in the podcast, there is a collective shudder going through the entire Horn Family Commune congregation right now. Really, Bob? Hair on pancakes? Absolutely. You know, the cute ones, the little silver dollar ones, and they range it around the plate. Yeah, right there. There it was. Yeah. Prettiest, longest, bleach blonde hair you ever wanted to see. Right there in the middle of it. Yeah. Just shining golden against the amber puddle of not really made from maple sap, maple syrup, high fructose corn syrup, whatever stuff it is. But at the IHOP, you can hear stuff. Usually it's, you know, stop tormenting your sister or quit kicking your brother. The stuff, right. But not, no. Not at this IHOP. No. Do you remember? Do you remember a couple of weeks ago, where was she? Indiana, I believe, who was having a hissy about marriage equality and repeatedly screamed, "Islamic! Islamic!" Remember her? I think we found her cousin. Really.
Okay? Yo no estoy defendiendo a nadie, okay?
You have the freedom to speak about what you're saying right now. You can't say this to my parents.
So, the angry, cranky, ignorant, bigoted, stupid, old white lady goes after folks because, well, they're not speaking Merkin. Big AAA, so as we all can understand.
Yo no estoy defendiendo a nadie. Okay? Yo no estoy defendiendo a nadie, okay?
You have the freedom to speak about what you're saying right now. You can't say this to my parents. They speak English, not perfect, but they speak it.
Ya, no hable español porque no quiero la señora que hable español.
I know. It's a little tough to get Granny's total content there, but then again, that's the way it is with folks that you generally need to chase down with the great big butterfly nets. But the medication isn't working.
Yeah, go back to Spain. We speak English.
And then did I hear Castro? We don't want Castro. What? I know.
Your fault for doing that. It's your fault.
English
it's your
English.
Fault for doing that.
I clean office. I clean bathroom. But you are stupid.
He's a monster.
Stupid. I'm janitor.
We speak English in America.
Yeah, I speak English. Yeah, not good, but I speak English, okay? It's stupid.
I hope that you speak English.
And she's not from Spain, by the way.
That's
so
Spain.
Don't be
that's
racist like that.
Spanish is from Spain.
You can't be...
Spanish is from Spain. This evening we have a Titanic right-wing geography lesson. Spanish is from Spain. Yes.
Doing that. That's
I've been
racist
to Spain,
song.
So I know.
Oh, well, she's been to Spain. Well, yep. Hey, Ron, you out there? Because this is a self-suggesting. Yeah, there it is. This is a self-suggesting bumper. Don't worry, Ron, I got it. That's not never been to Spain. I don't have it.
Damn!
Well, I never been to Spain, but I kinda like the music. See, the ladies are insane there.
Or at least the American ladies who go and come back. God, no!
I don't care.
You don't care. That's why I'm saying it.
You can't be doing that, sending someone to speak. I'm not telling you to do whatever I want you to do.
Do you want the Russians over here telling you what to do?
The Russians! From Spain! The Russians! Oh! La señora es muy loco en la cabeza. Did I say that right? Should I be yelled at by a cranky old white lady? See, this is the value of foreign language instruction. How do I put this without getting in trouble? Lots of people who don't necessarily look like they are recently arrived to the United States need to learn, and I mean to a degree of fluency, and apparently according to certain Volkswagen ads, all you got to do is plug your Spanish CDs into the player of a Passat diesel, and you can drive from New York to Mexico without ever filling up for gas or something, and in the 12 hours time or whatever, you'll be speaking Spanish by the time you get to the border. That's what we need! Because then, We can just sit around and cause all the cranky old right wingers, cranky old white wingers, to just have a stroke at the IHOP. Because Granny hears about, two or three little pieces of plaque breaking loose from hers. Do you want the Russians coming in? What?
And she's not from Spain, by the way.
Spanish is from Spain.
You can't be doing that.
I've been to Spain, so I know.
I don't care.
You don't care. That's why I'm saying it.
You can't be doing that, telling someone to speak. I'm not telling you to do what.
As Jeremy in Vermont notes, this old bat is a good example of why we can't have nice things. Can't even have a pleasant little weekend trip to the IHOP.
Whatever I want you to do.
Do you want the Russians over here telling you what to do? Do you want the Nazis telling you what to do?
Not Spanish Russian Nazis! Next thing you know, it'll be the nihilists. Daggummit, there are rules. This is not Vietnam. IHOP invaded by a Spanish-Russian Nazi-speaking Castilian. See why I started with this one? Yeah, there's a certain amount of shared sympathy out here. Marty with an email. Sigh. The American people, once again, in full flower. Robert in Australia asking, did this woman expect people in Spain to speak English? No, apparently they're supposed to speak Nazi Russian. And notice the verb tense. Do you want them back? When were they here? Yeah, I know. This is not earth-shattering planetary news. But you know what? My personal view is that there is more to be learned about where we are, why we're in this handbasket, and why it seems to be getting so hot, and why the avenue is so broad in moments like this than there are in 15 press conferences. Brother Deacon Asa says, may I take a stab at what Grandma is going to say next? I got many Spanish friends. Okay, you're locked in. You're committed. Jeremy in Vermont says this has to be Trump's grandma in ghost form. Yeah, she seems awfully corporeal to me, Jeremy. We haven't said his name yet. Randy, dadgummit. Randy said I had 632, but we didn't say his name. It's like Beetlejuice. You can say Nazi all you want to. You can't. It's the other name. And we all know Gerald's got it anyway. It's like magic with him. Yeah, as Carol notes, I've been to Kentucky. I don't speak fucktard. And sticking feathers up your ass doesn't make you a chicken. Don't encourage him, Carol. You know the best part of this? It's only half over.
And so I know.
I don't care.
You don't care. That's why I'm saying it.
You can't be doing that, telling someone to speak. I'm not telling you to do whatever I want you to do.
Do you want the Russians over here telling you what to do? Do you want the Nazis telling you what to do?
That's what you're doing to my mom. You're telling her what to do. She speaks
English.
She's not perfect, but she speaks English. You can't do that.
We have freedom of speech. You see? You're the proof of it. We want that freedom.
Yeah, but you can't be telling anyone to speak English if you're in America. You don't do that. I don't tell you how to live and you live here. This is America. We have the freedom to do what we want.
We don't want the Nazis back. We don't want the fascists back.
Who's talking about Nazis here?
We don't want...
Well, sir, she is. Because, you know, Donald Trump told her through the plate in her head that Russian Nazi Mexicans are coming to America to make her speak Spanish, I think. Now, see, what you... I'm not the guy who tells people, but really, you know what's fun to say to one of these people? Hey, lady, what was the first European language spoken on the North American continent? English. They's reading from the King James Bible. No, lady. You want to try early ancient Norwegian or early ancient Danish? Okay, so we got that. That's one. Number two and number three can be problematic because Christopher Columbus was an Italian and he had a polyglot crew of ne'er-do-wells, miscreants, and the recently released from prisons and jails and whatnot. So the second European language spoken in North America was either Italian or Spanish, and whichever was second, the other was third. Then comes French. That's four. Yeah, English, fifth. Yeah. Portuguese goes into the mix down in the south of the equator, which would actually, if you were considering the entire hemisphere, it would bump English to sixth. You can try that with one of these idiots, and it's usually pretty fun. But let's wrap up, shall we?
Who's talking about Castro here? Who's talking about Castro here? You can't do that.
Did you catch that? Do you want Castro back? And everybody kind of, and I do too. Yeah, I kind of giggle when we talk about, say, the homeschoolers who teach their children about how Lewis and Clark led the Corps of Discovery to the Pacific Coast and kept the Nazis from attacking the Alamo, which is located at Pearl Harbor in Hawaii. Ecce Gladys. Yeah, as Irish Dave notes, how soon we have forgotten the Dutch Nazi speak.
That
you
being racist.
You can't to do that. You see, we have no freedom.
Yeah, you can't tell someone what to do, though. I'm not telling you what to do. I'm not telling you to learn Spanish. I don't care if you don't speak Spanish.
I don't want Spanish. You have been to Spain, and I have.
I have been to Spain before.
And you speak Spanish there?
And
you
I speak
go
Spanish.
Over there and speak Russian?
I speak Spanish, too.
No, you go over there and speak Russian. You know what? There were some Russian speakers in Spain, and it wasn't even 100 years ago. Oddly enough, they were fighting against the fascists, but never mind.
Cheers. They're not. If they have people like you, that's sad. If they have people like you, that's sad.
Our freedom is
important.
Our freedom is
to do what
we
want.
We fought for our freedom.
She works.
We fought for our freedom.
She cleans offices. She.
I mean, this should be like pinned in a box in a museum somewhere. Not her, but the exchange or something. This is what 20 years of Fox News does to a country.
speak English. We fought for our freedom. Russian Nazi Spanish speaking. I've been to Spain.
I'll guarantee you, this is what she's one of those Americans who, assuming she has, that when she went abroad, she communicated by if the native speaker of another tongue didn't understand her, she simply yelled it in English louder. No, I said, where is the liquor store? America. Hell yeah.
Cleans offices.
Yeah, well, good for her.
But you can't do that. You have to change your heart or you're going to die really soon. You're going to die really soon.
We're all going to die.
Yeah, but you're
going to
die soon. But you're going to die.
We're all going to die. The Nazis are here.
Real soon.
The Castros are
That's
here.
Why I'm voting no for Trump.
Yeah.
No
yeah,
for Trump. No for Donald Trump. No for...
The Castros are here. With their Russian Nazi ways. Michael and Madison. Fresh Danish is served here. Bob, don't be silly. A person can no sooner speak ancient Danish than they could eat one. What then? Middle Danish? And I'm sure there's got to be. Well, what is it? The Icelandic sagas are in Icelandic, but oh, how easily we get off into the weeds. But I understand. Tim from L.A. Titanic logic, huh? Speak English in America. This teabagger says we need to speak English in America because Spanish is a foreign language and Spanish originated Europe and English from the U.K., which is also in Europe. Wouldn't then the Iroquois, Cherokee, or other indigenous language be the official language of the USA? Well, yes. And I would say it would... Let's delve into that for a moment. There were probably, in, say, 1518, there were probably more speakers of Nahuatl, N-A-H-U-A-T-L, in the world than there were speakers of English. Or, for that matter, of Spanish, or Portuguese, or ancient Danish. Apple. Now a cherry. The cheese just never, no. But really, there were probably more speakers of, what was the language in the Peruvian coastal empire? Quechua? Probably more speakers of that language than Spanish, Portuguese, or English. Because, see, tucked away in all of this is the hateful reality of genocide. But you can't tell that to great Auntie Gladys here. Because we fought for our freedom. What you mean, we? I can hear my indigenous friends saying that now. And tucked away in this is also the fact that there is a... distinct lack of knowledge about What does Great Auntie Gladys here think that the indigenous peoples on this continent communicated by sign language? Or maybe the Queen's English? The fact that one does not frequently hear those original languages is a product, again, not just of genocide, but of concerted efforts on the parts of governments in Canada and the United States and Mexico to permanently rub out those languages, no matter how much brilliance we might have learned from them. I love language. You know, I can certainly understand why Noam Chomsky went into it. Now, the languages that remain, we're trying to save. People are trying to save. There are immersion classes in Anishinaabemowin, which I'm not pronouncing at all well, in the upper Midwest and in Canada. There remain a million speakers of the tongue of the Triple Alliance in Mexico. There are, because I went and looked them up one night and I just listened to them online. There are all kinds of radio stations in, there's one that's broadcast in Otomi, which is another Mesoamerican language. But just as a gentle reminder, anytime you hear one of these ignorant fox-watching, teabag hat-wearing, bloviating morons hooting about we speak English, just let there be a little tickler on a brain cell somewhere in there that says, because genocide. This is indeed the titanic intellect of the right wing. To be able to say, speak English! And never even have a momentary flash that the ability to say that is rooted in the deliberate slaughter of millions of indigenous people. By the way, Michael in Madison says, yes, that Middle Danish does look rather tasty. I'll have that one. No, the one behind it. Over a bit. That one. And a dozen of the plain donuts. Just having a little fun, feigning ignorance. I'd assume ancient Danish was a thing, probably, or not. Hadn't actually considered it. Or, you know, if you're not up for the Danish, you can just toddle almost due south, Michael, for, you know, 1,000 miles or so. And there's a little town called West Texas, which Edward has told us about, and which our good friend Dr. Allen took me to, you know, where they blew up the town because money, ammonium nitrate fertilizer plant explosion. But there's a little convenience store and bakery right there, hard by the interstate. And what is the name of those classic Czech pastries? Oh, they were mighty good, and they're kind of like a Danish, but I think they're high Czech. Or low check. I'm not sure. I was just trying to be. Yeah. The marvelous. We have a note from the marvelously coherent Diane in Kansasstan. Subject line: IHOP blues. That woman is stringing together right wing talking points in an obnoxious way. Well, that's the only way you can string together right-wing talking points, Diane, thus demonstrating your marvelous coherence. Yeah, she's a walking, talking, babbling collection of right-wing idiocy. It's everything you ever heard Victoria Jackson or Godzilla from Wasilla, or T-Rump, or Rand Paul. Or any of the other weirdos of the conservative movement. And I mentioned G. Gordon Liddy last week. I don't want my kid learning to speak illegal, illegal alien. Ron in Canada with a note. She probably confuses Spain with her trip to a Mexican restaurant in Rhode Island. Oh, wait a minute. A nice long ring of the bell for that. Absolutely. That's toaster worthy. Ron says, I find it very interesting that 90% of all those people who invoke the we fought for our your freedom mantra have probably never been in uniform, never been overseas in a hostile area, have never been in a combat zone, yet they've lived vicariously through Fox News for so long they can almost remember the sacrifice as something real. Yeah, it's, well, some of us remember when during the 8 years of American exceptionalism that were the reign of Ronnie Reagan, Ronald Wilson Reagan, 666, just saying, when he remarked that someone was talking about President Grover Cleveland. And Ronnie said, well, yes, I played him in a movie once. But of course, the great communicator was in the process of becoming the great forgeticator, and what he was actually remembering was that he had played a baseball pitcher named Grover Cleveland Alexander in a moving picture once. That's it. Thank you, Carol. The Czechs make these wonderful pastries called kolachkis. A fruit-filled thumbprint in the middle of the dough and dusted with powdered sugar. Yes, and you can get them right there by Interstate, I can't remember the number of it, in West Texas. And by that, by now, unlike a couple of years ago, by now the aroma of ammonium nitrate has probably dissipated, although you can probably still see where parts of the town were. It looked like a tornado went through. I mean, just concrete slab, foundation, no house. Destroyed the school. The junior high, the high school, everything had the fences. Yeah, because money. Dan says, I love languages, too. I love Laurie Anderson's lyric, Language is a Virus from Outer Space. Ooh, that's kind of fun. Sort of conjures up the image of the proto-humans with their bloody thigh bones dancing around the monolith, doesn't it? Irish Dave. Lib Talker advocates cannibalism of day-old Danish. Irish Dave says, the classic riddle in Latin America is, what do you call someone that speaks two languages? Bilingual. What do you call someone who speaks three languages? Trilingual. And finally, what do you call someone who speaks badly only one language? Norteamericano. Irish Dave adds, of course, some of my best amigos speak the English, too, also. Mañana. Dave. Stephen, China says, personally, I don't have a problem with most folks speaking a foreign language in the USA, but I have to draw the line at those illegal aliens who sneak across our southern border and expect everyone to suddenly understand Mexican! Just too much messing with Texas, if you catch my drift. I do. And having gotten done with, presumably, this cranky old lady, and with Steve having conveniently provided us our segue into Texas, but not really. It's more like Mississippi, but all this got started in Texas. It's on. kind of. WJTV and WDAM television. Well, damn. Wouldn't you love to be the booth announcer for WDAM? Well, damn. Concludes another broadcast day. Camp Shelby is a military emplacement near Hattiesburg, Mississippi. And Camp Shelby is also a U.S. Special Forces Command location for Jade Helm 15. Mm-hmm. So earlier today, no one was injured when a red Ford Ranger pickup truck went driving by Camp Shelby and two, of course, white men are thought to have fired a freedom protector, you know, a gun, because freedom, because this is the greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever, fired a gun at Camp Shelby because it's a location for Jade Helm training exercises. Now, Camp Shelby is about 134,000 acres, so luckily these patriots didn't do any harm that has yet been ascertained. Our freedom protectors, and, you know, I feel absolutely 100% confident in saying that these were not progressive people, liberal people. No. And, right, Marty, two white men, therefore not terrorism, and it was not an active shooter situation. It's just a couple of good old boys. Just like the beginning of the Dukes of Hazzard song. Just a good old boy. Right. Just a couple of good old boys out there with their Second Amendment remedies, protecting America against the Obama takeover of the southern United States after they done took away their freedom flag of their Confederacy, just driving around in their red Ford Ranger pickup truck, which, by the way, had plastered across the top of the windshield, and I'm sure this has no meaning whatsoever, the words Broken Arrow. And I don't think it meant that the good old boys had done come from Oklahoma. Mm-mm. No, Broken Arrow is a term, a military term that's entered in the popular culture that was used to describe a camp or a base that has been overrun. So now, although, mind you, being right-wingers and God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered Christians, probably, who support the troops, and hell, that red Ford Ranger pickup truck may have a yellow magnetic ribbon made in China on the back on the back tailgate. Ain't got no front bumper. I'm looking at a picture of it. They probably lost that in the war. I had Broken Arrow across it, so draw your own conclusions. Cold Civil War. I keep talking about it. It keeps getting warmer. Wouldn't you love to be a fly on the wall in the Pentagon? There at Jade Helm Planning Command. General, we've been fired upon. Yeah? Ruskies? Chinese? Iranians? Could it be the Iranians? We could get it on with the Iranians. No, sir. Mississippians. Damn! No, I really sincerely do not mean Marty, the movie with John Travolta, Christian Slater, and Samantha Mathis, directed by John Woo. What a terrible movie. Incorrectly named, Marty says. It should have been called Empty Quiver, not Broken Arrow. Jack had a similar thought down in Shreveport. Jade Helm, yeah, that's how you support the troops. Oh, wait, not so much anymore. Merca! Wolverines! I got to get that reverb going. I just really, really do. So that's the start to our Titanic Tuesday. And we have, and at the close of this first hour of the program, we are $45 into our $200 daily fundraising goal. And again, the equipment fund is on. If you want to just help with the regular fundraising, that's cool. And, you know, PayPal, U.S. Mail, whatever, send me a note. But if you want to be part of the equipment fundraising, then just put a memo in the PayPal or on the check or whatever, say equipment fund, and it will be pushed off to one side that way and separated out from the bill-paying keep the horn on the air effort. Yeah, Broken Arrow, Irish Dave notes, is just a heritage kind of deal. So we'll take a little break. It is Tuesday, and that means we have the Green News Report. And, of course, we can have your calls. The lines are open. 304-574-8178 being one of them. 304-574-8178. The other one, the Stress Line, named in memory of Bill, Mr. Stress Miller. 304-663-4676. 304-663-HORN. Okay, and of course, if you want to get in via Skype to Skype, which is always free from anywhere on the planet, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, is the contact address on Skype. So if you've never done it before, send me a contact request, and we'll be going. Yep. I really do like that song. We're going back to it. This is Conversation Radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Well, I never been to Spain, but I kinda like the music. See, the ladies are insane there, and they sure know how to use it. They don't abuse it, never gonna lose it, I can't refuse it. Well, I never been to England, but I kinda like the Beatles. Well, I hit it for Las Vegas, only made it out to Needles.
What? It's Tuesday, August 4, 2015.
No challenge poses a greater threat to our future and future generations than a changing climate.
President Obama announces historic climate action to cut carbon emissions. Clean energy is booming around the world, especially in China. Plus, a bad day for big coal. The nation's largest coal company files for bankruptcy.
All of that very sad news and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
I was somewhat concerned about the Pope's statement.
Did you read it?
I didn't read it. And
didn't even read it. More kabuki theater from the world's climate change deniers. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, it was announced over the weekend that Beijing in China would be the host of the 2022 Winter Olympics.
That's correct.
You're asking, why is that a Green News Report story? The reason is because the last time that China had their Olympics in Beijing, it caused a great deal of embarrassment for them as the world got to see just how filthy, dirty, polluted the air was in that city. And they've made some big changes, not just in Beijing, but across the entire country to deal with carbon emissions in that country. I would say more attention on Beijing in 2022 is only going to be a good thing when it comes to carbon emissions and the things that you, young lady, care about.
Yes, I think you're absolutely right about that. And China is racing ahead of everybody else.
What? Republicans told me that would never happen.
We'll get to that in a moment. First, President Obama on Monday took another big action on climate change, releasing the final version of his historic Clean Power Plan, the first ever rules to ramp down carbon dioxide emissions from the nation's power plants, which are the single largest source in the U.S. of greenhouse gas emissions that cause global warming.
We're the first generation to feel the impact of climate change and the last generation that can do something about it. And that's why I committed the United States to leading the world on this challenge, because I believe there is such a thing as being too late. The science tells us we have to do more.
And doing more includes these final rules that are specifically tailored to each state's current energy mix. Ultimately, they will cut U.S. emissions from power plants more than 30% by 2030 off of 2005 levels. The final rules differ from the previous draft rules by giving the states more time to comply. Now, the new standards are a major step toward establishing a market signal by putting the first ever limits on the nation's biggest polluters. Thanks to natural gas and the rise of renewable energy, most of the nation's power plants are already well on their way to cutting their emissions, but some are still fighting. And now that the final rules are out, we can expect legal attacks from all who profit from the current pollution system, like the coal industry and the utility industry.
And, of course, those are the only people that are really fighting against this, those who stand to make a profit. Everyone else is just reacting to the propaganda of that handful of incredibly wealthy individuals who want to kill the planet so they can continue to profit.
And President Obama addressed that propaganda. He pre-bunked those critics in his remarks, noting that the same people said the same thing in trying to stop the nation's wildly successful standards to cut air pollution, to cut acid rain, and to create mileage standards for cars.
Whenever America set clear rules and smarter standards for our air, our water, our children's health, we get the same scary stories about killing jobs and businesses and freedom. The same characters who are going to be criticizing this plan were saying this is going to kill jobs. It's going to be wildly expensive. And each time they were wrong.
And they never seem to get tired of being wrong.
And nobody ever seems to call them on it. And now, yet another new study finds that the Clean Power Plan will actually save Americans money. It's a new analysis of energy trends from Georgia Tech University. It calculates that the Clean Power Plan will actually lower energy bills overall due to increased energy efficiency and cheaper wind and solar coming online. Not to mention saving billions of dollars in avoided health care costs from air pollution. Meanwhile, it was a bad day for big coal. On the same day that Obama announced his clean power plan, one of the world's largest coal companies, Alpha Resources, filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection, citing falling demand for its coal around the world. Since 2012, more than 40 U.S. coal companies have filed for bankruptcy. And a new analysis from The Economist of Global Clean Energy Investment finds that China, of all the countries in the world, is building the most renewable energy, bigger and faster than any other country in the world.
Despite all of those years of Republicans telling us that China would never curb their emissions. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Because, you know, we've been right all along. You can find us and follow us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Turn this thing around, turn it now. Hey, show tomorrow. Turn it now, come on. It's everything. Turn it now, take your
man. 13 minutes past the hour on this Titanic Tuesday on the horn. And, hey, there's Jim, who got us started on the fundraising this evening. Let's run over to the stress line and see what's happening. Hey, Jim.
What's up, Bob?
Well, you know.
That's for the equipment fund. That's the one.
Oh, okay. I didn't see it. Okay, so we'll make
it. I put it on there.
Oh, I didn't see the note.
Okay. I just wanted to let you know. Yeah, because that would be great. You do it, take it over. When Malloy's not there, gets you into a wider audience, perhaps.
I think it'd be a lot of fun.
And it could be like the next Howard Stern or something like that.
No.
One thing I did want to talk about was this morning I woke up like around 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, I guess, and the TV was on, and it was on, must have fallen asleep watching MSNBC. And so it's on Morning Joe, and what does it? He just this fucking asshole. You're still on terrestrial, but he's talking about. He just goes into attacking Elizabeth Warren, and just the whole, just that whole right wing. What was he saying about it? But it was just, it's just lies, You should get a clip of that. But it's typical, that's why I don't watch it much. But it's just like, I imagine people who just get their news from that kind of think, well, I'm just, former congressman. So
right.
He wouldn't lie. But,
Really, there are people in this country who think like that still, Jim? Because I hear former congressmen, and that's not the first thing that comes to my mind.
Me neither. There's only a few congressmen and senators I trust what they say, and Bernie Sanders is one of them. I'm donating $10 a month to that, and I've got about 200 more hours, a little bit less than Louisiana, Stan. I'll be in Vegas.
Are you for sure? Are you so? You're for sure bugging out?
Yeah. I'll take my chances with the climate change out there as opposed to here. So that's the status and the uptick. But okay. Oh, and the weird thing when Morning Joe and like I talked to somebody else. Of course, everybody just sits there like meat puppets and acts like whatever Morning Joe says is gospel, and nobody even challenged him on what he was saying, But I guess that's so.
How do you challenge it? I mean, some of the stuff that all you can do is look across at him and go, "Well, you're an idiot."
Yeah, but sometimes they do like a full argument.
Sometimes Mika will we'll give him that we'll give him that sidelong fish-eyed kind of and say you can't possibly mean that.
Right. But you know, that's just the way. Yeah, that's why I can't watch that too much. You know, I watch it more. I can't even stand a couple minutes of Fox News. I have to depend on.
Oh, I can't. No, I can't take 2 minutes. I I've got empirical evidence of how bad Fox News is for anybody with a functioning brain. When I go when I go down to my little dock in a box, and they inevitably have Fox News on in the morning, especially if the physician's assistant is working who likes to pray over people's maladies. No, really, he writes them a prescription and then prays on them. Not kidding. If I sit there for like a half an hour waiting for my appointment, you know, and the first thing they do is they go back and they get your vitals, you know, your blood pressure, your O2 saturation, your weight, your temperature, all of that stuff. If I sit there for about 30 minutes with Fox News on, by the time they sit me down to take my blood pressure, your blood pressure's up today. I said, well, yeah, you're running Fox out in the damn waiting room. I'm surprised there isn't a stroke a minute going on out there.
That's right. One time I was at I went to a doctor's and something down here in Louisiana stand, and she was filling out the forms, and she was a religion. I go, atheist. And then the lady, she's like, you really should. She kind of pseudo tried to proselytize to me a little bit. I just let it slide. But
well, I was in an appointment last week, and it was a doc I'd never been to, and it was a real doc, not a doc. And I had to fill out several pages of stuff, and one of the things they asked was, "Do you have any religious preferences that we should be aware of in treating you?" And I wrote on the form, none whatsoever, and I will thank you not to bring any sort of religious issues up during my appointments, period.
Well, the atheist freaks them out more. that implies you might, because it's weird. I think when you throw atheists to people, they'd almost rather you believe in the devil than you believe in some sort of magic being, so then you could, then they have a chance of, you know, luring you in. All you got to do is come over with light. And it's just like, my birthday was like 2 days ago. And
happy birthday.
Yeah, thanks. I'm getting to the point where, you know, they're not as much fun as they used to be. But, you know, I was looking at most of my siblings and all that, and they're like my sister is like when I went to I had on a Bernie shirt, and before that, when I went to the Bernie rally, and I was going to the Bernie rally, and she was like, she's supporting guess who? I think I told you, but she's supporting. She's a big Trump fan. And it's just like I don't have time to go into.
Let that one zoom on past. Pretend you didn't hear it. What? I'm sorry, huh? You said something, right?
Well, yeah. So you try and talk to her, but she I guess maybe she just goes through what's powerful men, even if they got most of their money through inheritance. I guess it spends the same at the bank, so that's all that really matters, you know. But that's the state of the family and everything. Like I said, it's just me and my brother, I think, who might vote. I mean, I'll vote for, like I said, I'd hate it if Hillary gets it, she gets it, and I'll have to vote for her because I can't throw away my vote on a Green Party.
Jim, it's August now, so September, October. 15 months until November, and it is 5 months, basically, until the first primaries start. And I'm just so, I don't know. I've got to, And I guess there are some middle of the roaders out there or whatever. He's disloyal. Not a good Democrat. I've got a feeling that I'm in the process of. You ever had one of those sweaters that just has one little thread loose, and you go, I'm gonna. But Mama told you, don't pull the loose threads on your sweater. But who listens to Mama, right? And you pull the loose thread, and the whole damn thing next to you, next thing you know, is just a pile of yarn around your feet because it's come unraveled. I am waiting for Senator Secretary Clinton's campaign to completely unravel. I don't know how it's going to happen. I don't know why it's going to happen. But there's something about her that kind of has this air of inevitable collapse. Maybe I'm wrong.
I know what you mean. And in fact, I heard something where there's some meeting or something on October 22nd, you know, like some sort of October surprise regarding something about Hillary or her finances. And,
why do you think we're getting all of these rumors about, you know, will Joe Biden run? I mean, I saw a story the other day that on his, and I'm not making light, I'm not making fun, but that on his deathbed, his son Beau looked at him and said, "Dad, you gotta run for president. Please, Dad, run for president. Do it for me, Dad."
Yeah, I heard that. That was weird, too.
Maybe there are people who are enthusiastic, yay, I can't wait for a Hillary Clinton administration, Democrats out there. I haven't met any of them.
Well, the only one I heard, I was listening to Mark Thompson.
I'm
serious. Thompson, yeah. Because I don't listen to him much. I listen to you. And he had a guest host there, and it was a woman and a young black attorney. I imagine black because I guess she just sounded, I don't want to sound racist.
Yeah, I know. No, just quit digging. Yep.
Okay. So anyway, quit digging. But she says, I'm for Hillary. We had a black president, now we get a woman in. And I'm thinking, that's the total wrong way. I mean, if you're going to vote for her. That's the total wrong.
You mean just checking off demographic boxes?
Okay. We have black president, now we have a white woman. And then we have a black woman after that, African American woman after that. To me, it's just burning it all out, you know? I mean, I'm giving him $10 a month, so.
I had a note from our buddy Mo Liberal, who also is impressed with his Bernie T-shirt and said it looks great. So that's two of you now.
Well, when I went to the thing out in is it really in the middle of nowhere? It's in a red area, but it was like a 4,000 room. It was about 4,000 people. It was full, 4,000 people, and. Not in Jefferson, but somewhere off of Jefferson Parish or somewhere. Not a big, you wouldn't expect. It was packed jam. And, the audience seemed pretty enthusiastic. And Bernie ended up showing up in speech, you know.
Yeah.
So I was like 40 yards away from him, 50 yards away.
Well, maybe, Nevada is an early primary too, isn't it? So maybe you'll get another chance out there.
Yeah, well, maybe. Well, I mean, I did in. But 2008, I voted for the caucus thing, and I went to it, and I wanted to, instead of being a toss-up between Hillary and Obama, and I wanted to vote for Kucinich, but because it was a caucus, since it was like 45-45, the tie between Hillary and Obama, I could even not vote. Because you need like 15% for it to count, 10%. Otherwise, you just don't. So I figured, I ended up voting for Hillary. But even back then, I didn't like it because it's the dynasty thing. You know, we talked about this before. You know,
I'm Look, I'm not nearly so worried about the dynasty thing, Jim, as I am about the corporatist thing.
Oh, definitely. But that's just an aspect of it. That's, to me, that's setting it up. I mean, you've got a whack job Bush money, and he has a chance of, you know, he can still win. I mean, any of the Republicans are, you know, just going to screw this country up inevitably.
And one of them's going to be it.
Well, you think the Republicans are going to win this year?
No. I mean, one of them's going to be the nominee. We need to steel ourselves to that. One of those people is going to be the banner carrier for American exceptionalism, Jim.
Really, and then you have to go back to Eisenhower, and basically, I think he ended up trying to save the Republican Party. Which, you know, that goes back to he was out of office in '61, and then
Bishop Willard Romney is probably still sitting there. In his house in California, saying, "Why won't they come and beg me? I mean, Trump's, please." Because he originally said, "Well, I thought about running, but now, my friends, I've decided not to." And that was the point where all the Republicans were supposed to say, "No, we love you, Mitt Bot, Willard Romney Bot. We love you. Please come and run again." Only they didn't. And so he's sitting there. He's sitting there taking long walks on the beach in Nixon fashion, muttering about how they didn't appreciate him. And somebody else muttered that kind of stuff too. But yeah, if you had 729, you still lose.
Yeah. Well, that's it. And you know, so just our main call to put that on the equipment fund.
Okay, great. Well, I will. It is so noted now.
So I'll clear out with somebody else. Get on.
All right, sounds good, Jim. And let us know when you get to Nevadistan.
Yeah, Viva Las Vegas. Check you later.
All right, see you, Jim.
Thank you.
Bye. Calling from Louisiana, Stan, and headed in short order to Nevadistan. Our buddy Jim. And there's Carol Baker. Hey, Carol.
Hey.
How in the world are you?
It's thundering in Hooterville, so if you lose me, that's why.
Oh, okay. I thought that was maybe your rolling coal diesel pickup truck neighbor.
Oh, goodness, no. It's my two tin cans and a string phone company.
Oh, I saw one of those jackasses the other day on the road here, and he belched out a cloud of black sooty smoke all the way from Arby's down to Wendy's.
No, I haven't seen any of those here, which is really funny since I've been driving a Prius.
Oh, because they single Prius drivers out because y'all ain't Americanly exceptional and love freedom and stuff.
That's true, but I sure like my 50 miles to the gallon.
Yeah, it's fun, isn't it?
It is, and I just got done paying $2.35 a gallon for gas.
Yeah, we're still about $2.59, I think, around here.
But that's how much it is 20 miles up the road.
Well, it's headed back down because, I mean, it's down below $50 a barrel now, isn't it?
Yeah, but that doesn't stop them from jacking it up 20 cents a gallon overnight.
Right. On the other hand, though, when we look at the crumbling infrastructure, and I'm glad you brought up gas prices because I was thinking about this the other day, here in West Virginia, when you go to pump your gas, there's a sticker on the pump that says, you are paying more than, and I forget what the number is, 60 cents in gasoline taxes. The federal, but most of that's West Virginia state tax. The federal gasoline tax is still like 18.4 cents per gallon.
Exactly.
And not that I want to pay higher gas prices. But it's been that way for a long time, hasn't it?
A very long time.
And considering that the Congress can't pass a highway bill for more than 3 months at a time, shouldn't maybe the Congress think about, I mean, what's wrong with a nice round quarter? I'd be okay to pay 25 cents in federal gasoline taxes, wouldn't you?
Well, yeah, but, you know, then I have to listen to about the jackbooted thugs. You know, stealing our tax money.
Confiscatory. No, they only talk about that in terms of in terms of income tax. Those regressive taxes that are paid more brutally by the poor than by the wealthy, generally the right wing stays pretty quiet about that. Then again, there's a thought we could bump up the marginal tax rates on the extremely wealthy and probably lower the gasoline tax. Call me crazy.
Why do you hate America, Bob?
I know, and I don't love freedom neither.
No, I was actually getting a big kick out of your IHOP story, and I wish I could think up of a clever, clever IHOP
acronym.
Acronym. Damn, that word just escaped me.
Yeah, but I caught it.
Because I was just sitting there thinking, she was sitting there spouting all these Fox News talking points, and I'm sure she brags to all of her friends down at, the Sons of the Confederacy Beer Hall that, she just learns so much on Fox, but therein lies the difference, Bob, between learning to parrot things that you've been told and critical thinking skills. And she doesn't know the difference. She never learned how to think for herself. She doesn't care about, you throw a fact at somebody like that and they're like a rabid dog ready to bite your hand off.
Oh, the funny thing is if you watch the video, she's standing there, I guess it's the checkout counter or something.
Mm-hmm.
And these folks seem to be off to one side. And this is just how right wingers are. Because we've discussed this in the past. They feel perfectly comfortable because they've been empowered by Fox to just horn in, cheap promo there, on anybody else's conversation. So here you've got people completely minding their own business and speaking Spanish.
Yes.
And Granny Gladys Aricept, who was a minute ago going to pay her check and probably stiff the server in the process.
Oh, she was going to stiff the server.
That woman don't tip. And just starts in on these people who are minding their own business. Speak English!
And I called bullshit on her ever having been to Spain, because believe me, she was not attacked in Spain for not speaking Spanish, which I'm sure her Spanish is limited to donde está el licoro storo.
Right, yeah.
I used to make fun of Mike Bloomberg. He actually speaks very good Spanish, but his New York accent in the in the execution of it was always hysterically funny to me. I used to refer to him as El Blumbito. she didn't speak Spanish, obviously, when she went to Spain. Because if she did, she would have learned respect for the culture.
No, because see, I forget who wrote it a little bit ago. I'm kind of with them. She thinks she went to Spain when she went to the Mexican restaurant in Rhode Island once with her nephew.
Oh yeah. So if she goes to Gojo's, has she been to Japan?
Bingo.
Taco Bell. She's been to Mexico.
Yeah, she walks into Gojo's and she says, "Domo arigato, Mr. Roboto."
Mr. Ching Chang Chong.
Yeah, and there you go. She's cultural immersion. You know it.
Yeah. Ugh. And in of all places, the International House of Pancakes. International? International?
The goddess does not take naps. I mean, this would have, pick a restaurant. I mean, Shoney's or Ponderosa. It would have been perfect at Ponderosa, but you're right. You're right. The goddess of irony, she gave this her special blessing. So, yes. Well, lady, it's the International House of Pancakes. I mean, they're speaking ancient Danish back there in the corner. Go. No. That's the Norsky Nook in the Upper Midwest. Yeah. That, right. Yeah. I love the Norsky Nook, by the way. Great little chain. Ever been there?
No.
Oh, you haven't been far enough north. It's this magnificent little chain, breakfast, lunch, dinner.
It's called what?
Norsky Nook.
I have never heard of that.
Oh, I've had a couple of meals there, and they're just lovely, and they make their
How
own.
How far north do you got to go?
I've had them in Wisconsin.
I've been to Wisconsin. I mean, it's like, you know, close to Iowa.
Hell, there may be Norsky Nooks in Iowa. We'll have to send Barbie on a recon.
Oh, I'll have to. My sister.
The pies. Oh, my God, the pies, Carol. You know that cinnamon biscuit thing that you put on Facebook? The pies at Norsky Nook are not to be believed.
That was a chocolate buttercream filled Long John.
Dear God.
I know. It's insane. You get through about half of one, and you're thinking to yourself, God, you know, when I get out of this sugar coma, it's going to be a whole new day.
So have you ever had a kolachki?
Oh, there was this wonderful old couple that lived across the street from us when I was just a tiny little tot. And yes, I really was a child. And Agnes and Joe Klubeck, they were Czech. And Agnes and Joe were like grandparents to us. And Agnes would bring this giant tray of kolachkis across the road because she knew there were like 47 children over in that house. And she always used to come over for her birthdays because there wasn't anything she loved more than a birthday cake. And I loved the way she talked. But yeah, we were raised on those, and I learned to make them. I did learn to make them, but you take the dough and you dip the dough ball in butter and set it on the tray and make a well in the middle with your thumb and fill it with fruit preserves and bake it until it's just brown and just lightly brown. And then, while they're still warm, you dust them with powdered sugar. They're heavenly.
Well, I finally remember the name of the place in West Texas. And I say that specifically because it's not like, you know, out in the West Texas town of El Paso. It's a place called West that's slightly north of Waco.
West Texas, isn't that where the...
Where the fertilizer plant blew up.
Fertilizer plant blew up.
Right. I went there almost... It'll be almost... Hard to believe. It's almost 2 years ago now. Mind-boggling. But it's called the Czech Stop. CZECH stop, and back here in the eastern part of the United States, we've got places where you can stop that have all kinds of Amish goodies.
Yeah,
and it's kind of like that. They got meat products. Oh my God, they had a jalapeno salsa that was to die for. I don't think they have jalapenos in the Czech Republic, or you know, there's no. Well,
I wouldn't
not native,
think so.
But my God. And they, you know, meat sticks, and but then they had an entire long bakery of a million different kinds of kolachkis. And in fact, it was our own beloved Edward from Dallas who first put me on the trail of those things, and then Alan pointed it out to me, Dr. Alan, when he had me down there to talk to the Waco Friends of Peace. And oh my God, they're wonderful. I still think about it.
I would imagine you do. Iowa is largely Scandinavian, but there is an enclave of Czechs in Cedar Rapids, which is where I was born and where my brother lives, and there's a huge Czech community there. So there are lots of Czech bakeries and restaurants and that kind of thing there. It's actually quite wonderful.
By the way, the research department, otherwise known as Ron in Canada, has ascertained that the Norsky Nook may only be found in Wisconsin.
Aha!
But still,
it's not far enough.
I'm not sure how far Barbie is, but it's worth the trip.
She's probably about an hour and a half from Prairie du Chien.
It's worth a look. The pies. Oh, my God, the pies.
No, listen, if you want pies...
No, and then they've got this... I was turned on to the... They've got this, like, Norwegian burrito thing. I know, it sounds crazy, doesn't it? But it's that real, real thin Norwegian flatbread.
Yeah.
With sausage and eggs and onions and everything inside it, and maybe some hollandaise or whatever. Oh! special. You know, they need to be advertising with us, but then again.
Hang on, I'm having a moment.
I understand. Yeah, I understand you there.
No, but there is a little town. Ron had bought this this hay hauler, and it was a special kind of hay hauler, and something was wrong with it, and he had to take it back to get it fixed, and it was down by Nevada, Missouri, and which isn't that far from...
and is that spelled N-E-V-A-D-A?
Yeah.
Of course Nevada. It is. How did I know?
Because it's Missouri. Anyway, there's a little town just not far from there, and we dropped the trailer off and had to wait for it because it was like a 2.5-hour drive down there. And we had stopped. We asked if there was any place to eat, and this guy was like, "Oh, you got to go to this restaurant." And this he goes, "It's 10 miles to the next town, but you got to go." And he goes, "And don't worry," he goes, "when you walk in the door, you'll know what to get." I'm like, "Okay." So we go over there, and there's this little 50-seat diner. And when you walk in, there is a pie case there when you walk in. And there are probably, Bob, I'm not kidding, there could not have been fewer than 50 different types of pie and cobbler in that case. And they were all handmade. And as fast as the waitresses were pulling those tins out to serve it, there was another old lady rushing in to replace it with another one. And some of them were still warm. And I mean...
Enough to make you want to just move there until you've tried them all? And then
I don't know. It's a pretty small town. I mean, and I know it's pie, but I don't know. I don't know if I could stand, you know, another Hooterville, but... it was so amazing that we ordered lunch, and I think our lunch was like $3.50, and it was like a hot roast beef sandwich and mashed potatoes and, you know, the whole thing with all the brown gravy and the whole shebang. So we get done with that, and the lady comes over, and she goes, "Okay," she just says, "Well, what kind of pie do you want?" And I said, "Well, what's warm?" And she goes, "Well, they just brought out some blackberry cobbler."
Oh.
And I was like, "Okay." And she's like, "Well, you'll want ice cream on that, right?" And I was like, "Okay."
Whipped cream.
Bring
the cardiologist and have him stand back behind me. That'll be fine.
Nah, screw the cardiologist.
Well, since we have somehow managed to move into food porn, Carol.
Yeah.
How do you feel about machine gun bacon?
What a shithead. Listen, I want a piece of equipment named after me. If we can have the stress line, can we have the Baker delay?
The Baker delay, absolutely.
Or, because I got to tell you, first of all, it wasn't a machine gun; it was an assault rifle.
Well, it was an AR-15. Yeah, semi-automatic.
Not a machine gun. Not a machine gun.
No. Machine guns have like, you know, little tripods and mounts.
Yeah.
And sandbags and right. No, I'm there.
And those rounds of ammunition that you just feed through?
Feed me, Mandrake. Feed me.
Exactly. But, yeah, you knew immediately from the sound of it that wasn't right. But, you know, but Ted was so proud that, you know, and he ate it. And I'm going, okay.
You see, you may have fallen for something there, Carol.
Yeah, he probably didn't eat that.
So for those who don't know, just a quick recap. In order to try to get a little bit of publicity, Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, anointed future king of America, son of Rafael Eduardo Cruz, made a little video that went, they tried to make go sort of viral.
It didn't work.
It went stupid. In which he said, in an effort to make people forget that he's Cubanadian, Ted Cruz is down here in Texas, putting on his really best, "We cook things differently," and proceeds to wrap a strip of bacon around the business end of what appears to be an AR-15, and then wraps it tightly with a piece of aluminum foil, and proceeds to squeeze off several rounds, thereby, and said, "Machine gun bacon." And because I try never to buy tickets to This Way to the Egress Carol, I couldn't help noticing that there wasn't a picture of them. There's a picture of him, by the way, by the damn way, eating bacon with a fork.
Yeah.
Did you catch the bacon with the fork part?
I guess.
Yeah, Ted Cruz, man of the people, eats bacon with a fork.
Yeah. Because real Americans don't pick it up and eat it with their fingers.
Right. Jesus. But anyway, so they don't show it coming off the barrel onto the plate, and there's no, what's the word in the filmmaking industry? There's no continuity.
Yeah.
That's the word, isn't it? You're laughing at me. What?
That's the word.
So we can't ascertain, and this is a legal word, chain of custody on said slice of bacon. We don't know that it was actually the bacon that was wrapped around the rifle. I want it to be the bacon that was wrapped around the rifle.
No, it came from the International House of Pancakes.
Came from intentional hair on pancakes?
Something like that.
So the Guardian newspaper reached out to foodsafety.gov, where a representative said, I do not recommend cooking bacon that way. There is no way to accurately tell if the bacon is getting the proper amount of heat using this form of cooking. Cleanliness is also a concern here. You want to make sure the surface you're using to prepare food is well sanitized and clean. The end of a machine gun is not recommended.
Oh, I'm sure bluing on your... I'm sure the bluing on the bacon was just yummy.
Now, we're not talking about the laundry stuff with bluing for extra whiteness. Or maybe we are.
No.
It's an AR-15, after all. I got to thinking about it. And bless her heart, I have several times noted now that our pal Bethany down in Dallas is it's kind of like having Molly Ivins as across the fence backyard neighbor on your Facebook page, because I mentioned the whole notion that, well, ain't gun oil, I mean, that's not your canola oil, is it?
No.
No, that's your hydrocarbon petroleum based product, right?
Yeah, this is not food grade.
So, isn't that crap carcinogenic?
Yeah, but I'd imagine Ted's, you know.
Well, Ted can have the healing hands of faith laid on if he gets the cancer, because remember, God's real good at curing cancer. He just can't grow back a pinky.
Well, yeah. Oh, God. He is such a disgusting trode.
But I pointed out as far as I'm concerned, where Ted is concerned, I want him to eat more machine gun bacon.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I remember when there was an entire campaign back during the reign of error of Dim Leader, when our buddies at the now long gone but not forgotten website WD40.com encouraged, it's been X number of days since Dick Cheney's last heart attack, send bacon. But Beth pointed out, only an unmanly wuss would use Pam when he could butter his biscuit with Hoppy's number 9. And just the very mention of butter his biscuit and Ted Cruz in the same, that sounds like something that can get you put in prison. Hey, what are you doing? Buttering your biscuit again, right, Ted? Yeah, that's what we call it down here. Yeah, right.
Is that code for something?
You know? I think so. And our pal Texas T picked up on the fact that it was not a machine gun too.
Oh, good.
Yeah,
I'm glad I wasn't the only one who caught that.
No, he said, funny, no fundamentalist ammosexual Second Amendmenter has come unglued correcting Ted on that it's not a machine gun, but a semi-automatic sport rifle. Hypocrisy? Just saying. Because, you know, let some panty-waist liberal say machine gun instead of semi-automatic sporting rifle, and the NRA will be on them like a duck on a June bug.
Yeah. I have been trolled to death on social media for making that mistake. It's not an assault rifle.
And it's not automatic. It's semi-automatic. You can't just squeeze the trigger and then the bullets keep flying out.
Okay.
By the way, Ron in Canada says, I can suggest a place to put the barrel into that AR-15. By the way, it's a piece of crap assault weapon that hasn't gotten much better over its 50-year lifespan. There's a reason that no special forces personnel anywhere in the world use it.
Just men with penis envy.
And, of course, Gerald, always Gerald, bacon with a fork? The fuck is he? Some kind of foreigner?
I don't want to, you know.
Hey, Ted, speak English before the Russian Nazis get you.
That's true.
I wonder what would happen to Ted Cruz if he ate bacon with a fork down to the IHOP?
Same thing that happened to Donald Trump and Sarah Palin when they ate pizza in New York City with a fork.
Ooh, I must have missed that one.
Oh, the Donald and Sarah met 4 years ago in New York City to have a little, you know, little chat, and they met at this New York City pizza parlor and immediately sat there and started eating it with a fork. It did not go well.
Nice.
Because in New York City, you fold your slices.
Yeah, you fold your slice over and you stick it in your mouth.
There you go.
Right? Here, just for the fun of it, let's hear that authentic Texan, Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, anointed future King of America, son of Rafael Eduardo Cruz. Let's hear him explain the whole not really a machine gun bacon thing, shall we? Oh,
yes.
A few things I enjoy more than on weekends cooking breakfast with the family. Of course, in Texas, we cook bacon a little differently than most folks. Ah!
Making machine gun bacon with Ted Cruz. Funky music. Somebody who might be Ted wrapping bacon around the barrel of the AR-15, then wrapping it in foil. Reckon Ted learned this, Carol, back when he was in survival training with the special forces. Oh wait. He's never heard a shot fired in anger or served in defense of his country, has he?
Like most of the GOP field, which has been finally announced, by the way.
Oh, has it?
Oh, yeah.
Who's
yeah.
in? Who's out? I'm dying to know.
Okay, Kasich made it. Kasich made the final slot there. Rick Perry's out. Rick Santorum is out.
Oh.
I know, and
I wanted the little fetus in the jar on the podium.
Darling, this is going to upset you, but there may not be a Smoldering Chode.
Oh no, he's going to have to stay down at Smoldering Chode and be interviewed by Fox in remote from the fainting couch.
He's going to have to broadcast from the kids' table.
Hold me, John.
Yeah, naturally, T-Romp gets the center spot. He will be flanked by Jebbia and Scott Fitzwalker Stan, and then Rubio's in. Oh, let's see, who do we got? Donald Trump, Jeb Bush, Scott Walker, Mike Huckabee, Ben Carson, Raphael, Marco Rubio, Rand Paul, Chris Christie made it, and John Kasich. And missing the cut, but invited to appear at the kids' table were Rick Perry, Rick Santorum, Bobby Jindal, Carly Fiorina, Lindsey Graham, Jim Gilmore, and George Pataki.
Who the hell's Jim Gilmore?
He's running for president. He's a serious candidate, damn it.
How'd I miss him?
I don't know.
Is he like the little tiny clown?
Well, you know, I ran out of dwarves. I was naming them all after the dwarves, but I ran out. There's only seven dwarves.
That's true, and one of them isn't stupid.
Well, then they'd all be.
Right. I mean, if you it's just stupid. Yeah.
But I heard Lindsay and and Santorum and Perry weren't going to get in, and all I could think of was wah, wah, wah.
Oh, Arthur has a suggestion here from the chat room. Ooh, I know, Bob. Ted Cruz can have a lady in a bikini cook the bacon with a flamethrower. Yeah, well, that, but wouldn't the bikini be kind of sinful?
Yeah.
Well, I'm dying. I'm curious now because of what Ron asked. Did Ted hold the fork in his left hand like most Canadians? We're going to have to fight through this, okay? How many clips through an AR-15 does it take to cook one miserable strip of bacon? I mean, that's kind of inefficient, isn't it?
You mean the one that he didn't eat?
Right. So, because he changes magazines, because he's a real gun handler, because, see, this is supposed to appeal to all the gun humpers out there. This is to bring in the Cletus vote.
There's grease coming down.
There's grease coming down. Okay, so it's unwrapped, and there's a... Nope, sorry. Sorry, Ron. And there is a little bit of continuity there, kind of. It shows him taking a plastic fork and getting a little bite of the bacon and sticking it in his mouth and saying, mmm. But you know what he doesn't do? And why am I not surprised?
You mean that Catholic girl swallow?
He doesn't swallow. meanwhile, here at 7:59 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, we have this from Gerald. Bacon with a fork. Thanks, Obama. And Marty says, bacon with a fork? I don't get it. Marty, do you eat bacon with a fork? Do you know anybody who eats bacon with a fork? I mean, okay, it's in a sandwich, so you pick up the sandwich. I mean, we're not complete hillbilly heathens here, but it's not, bacon is not a fork-friendly product. Well, okay, I mean, if you thread it among the tines or something, but maybe I'm betraying my own barbarity, Carol.
Well, then we're from the same litter because I pick mine up and eat it.
And then I mean that allows you to then lick your fingers.
Well, yeah.
To get that bacony deliciousness off your fingers.
That's right. And the gun grease.
And the cosmoline.
Yeah.
I mean, cosmoline has kind of a smell to it. Well, then again, maybe it wasn't a brand new AR-15, so they done got the cosmoline off of it.
Although, on the other hand, I've never known Ted Cruz to be an arbiter of taste. So,
but he sure did sound all Texan, didn't he?
But he did not sound Texan. But there was one more story I wanted to share with you.
Oh, do please.
Hattiesburg, Mississippi. Did you hear about this?
Oh, the Jade Helm.
Two men open and fire on the soldiers.
Yeah, that was
Mississippi.
Yeah, that was the segue out of Granny Gladys Aricept.
And I'm sitting there going, you know, this is the kind of stupid right-wing paranoia that's fomented by Alex Jones and exploited by Greg Abbott that has real-world consequences.
Right. Fluoride, mandrake, and little children's ice cream. Jade Helm.
You know, I support the troops as long as they're not that one's troops coming here to get our guns.
Oh, and by the way, a little note coming in from Irish Dave. The AR, the automatic rifle, AR-15, automatic rifle according to the U.S. Army bitches, really only heats up if it's real dirty and shit. So, that makes it even yummier, doesn't it?
Ugh. Ugh.
No, and by the way, Marty confirms that he has used a fork for bacon. Well, okay, Marty. I mean, I guess that's it. We're barbarians, Carol.
Okay. But really, Marty, you should try picking it up. Just try it.
It's delightful. And by the way, picking up some bacon inside your scrambled eggs, that's not eating bacon with a fork. I'm talking about deliberately skewering the bacon all by itself. Because then you got to cut it. But when you try to cut bacon, doesn't it fall all to pieces if it's overdone? And if it's a little underdone, isn't it damn near impossible to cut?
Yeah, it's stringy.
That's what I thought. The things we get into on this program, Carol Baker.
It's true. There are right ways and wrong ways to do things.
And, I mean, the gun barrel couldn't have been that hot, or wouldn't it have, like, melted the plastic fork?
Well, I don't know. Maybe they cooled it to room temperature for his delicate sensibilities.
You know? Oh, okay. And here's Devin, who I didn't think ate bacon at all. I ate bacon with a fork. I was born and bred hillbilly, unlike yuns from the barbarians from down yonder. Oh, what have we started here? Then there's Tim from L.A., Carol. Fork with a bacon? I use chopsticks.
Well, okay.
Well, there's an argument to be made for chopsticks.
Yeah.
They're extremely efficient.
Yes, if you know how to use them.
But you have to speak English while you're using them. Or the Russian Nazi Spaniards will get you.
I hate that. But, you know, considering that I'm an Islamo-feminazi, you know, gay lover, there's just no telling what sort of terror could rain down on America.
Well, exactly. And Ron, meanwhile, says, I do find, and by the way, what you said, this is important, the Jade Helm attack was in Hattiesburg, Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
Not Texas.
But it still has...
It's metastasized from Texas across the South.
That's right.
And by the way, I wonder who told the yokels in their Red Ford broken arrow pickup truck that it was part of Jade Helm. Maybe Alex Jones?
I'd imagine.
So,
I'm a pacifist, and I often think if I ever met that man face to face, I'd just throat punch him.
Yeah, yeah. And, I've got one other thing for you real quick.
Okay.
Before we go. Because you are a much more astute follower of the culture than I.
What culture?
Yeah,
the elderly culture?
Yeah, I know. Are you familiar with the word cuckservative?
You mean as in David and Charles?
No. That's Coke.
I thought maybe you just, you know, had something in your throat.
No.
Cuckservative.
No. Cuckservative. CUCKSERVATIVE.
Never heard it.
Ah. Neither had I until yesterday.
What is it?
It's a new word. And it's a word that the right-wingers, and especially the fanciers of T-Rump, are using to describe anyone who has even a shred of civilization about them.
Really?
Obviously, you know what cuckoldry is.
You're kidding me.
Well, just the stuff I find out that I didn't necessarily want to know, but now it's stuck there on a damn brain cell. There is apparently a fetish out there among white folks. Tell me if you need to go and bleach your brain.
I'm already there. I got the Clorox in hand.
There is apparently a fetish out there, and I'm not doing this for shock value. This is a real story. There's a fetish out there among white people whereby white men get sexually excited by the prospect of watching their white wives have sex with a black man.
I've heard of that.
Cuckoldry. Because to cuckold is for some guy who's not married to a woman to have sex with a woman while she's still married. And the cuckold is the guy who is, you know, not getting it.
Well, you know what? If there's anything that the ultra-conservatives know about, it's porn.
Without a doubt. So, I mean, it does not surprise me in the least that this arises out of the right wing. But this, I ran across this story at Salon. It's a Joan Walsh piece. The GOP crack-up continues, the raging civil war over the disgusting cuckservative slur. And again, I had no idea. But, of course, naturally, it's something that has been ushered along by the oxymoron, you know, Flush Flimball. And Joan Walsh writes, cuckservative, you see, is short for a cuckolded conservative. It's not about a Republican whose wife is cheating on him, but one whose country is being taken away from him and who's too cowardly to do anything about it. She continues, it apparently comes from a kind of pornography known as cuck, in which a white husband, either in shame or lust, watches his wife be taken by a black man. Someone she interviewed pointed out, a cuckservative is therefore also a race traitor.
Mm.
And that's Matt Lewis, who is a mild-mannered, clean-cut conservative writer.
So unless you're just a fire-breathing, bagger, libertarian, screaming idiot, anything towards the center is that. I can't even say the word.
I know. So she cites white nationalist Richard Spencer of the National Policy Institute, who, interviewed by Dave Weigel, said of Trump, A, he is a tougher, superior man than conservatives, which isn't saying much, and B, he seems to grasp the demographic displacement of European Americans on a visceral level. We see some hope there.
Because he's such a man of the people, right? He's one of them.
Well, he's one of them if them are the pasty-faced, doughy white folks who are slowly but surely being sort of demographic right out of relevance in this country. And that's fine by me. I mean, what? It's not going to be that long before this is a minority-majority country. Which
scares the shit out of them.
Well, yeah, it scares the living daylights out of them. But, in fact, it's just a matter of population dynamics returning this continent to the way it was in the first place. But, yeah, Limbaugh egged it on. If Trump were your average, ordinary, cuckolded Republican, he would have apologized by now, and he would have begged for forgiveness, and he would have gone away. Yeah.
Narcissists don't apologize.
No, and narcissist billionaires never apologize.
They don't have to.
I mean, this goes hand in hand with his statement a while back. Yeah, well, you know, I think I'd be on pretty good terms with Vlad Putin there. I think we can talk.
Good. Oh, sorry.
So we have a new word. Don't be surprised if that gets bandied around a little bit more.
When it comes up, I'll know who to thank. By the way, I wanted to congratulate you on your liberal lion of a senator there, Joe Manchin.
Oh, stop it.
For voting to federally defund Planned Parenthood.
What a piece of work that man is. Thank you, Shakespeare. Yeah, I know. What can I say?
I saw that vote, and I was like, oh, Bob, you must be so proud.
Yeah, I'm so proud. I'm so proud. I wrote up about 1,500 words and then realized the Gazette wouldn't print about 90% of them. Not Paul Frazelak and Black Stag and Blue Note Wazelak. But to Joe,
all I could think of was if my vagina was made of coal, maybe he'd like it better.
Oh, he'd dig it. Yeah, see what I did there? Huh? What?
That's all that you did.
It'd be a blast. Right. But Joe, from time immemorial, has been a pro-life Roman Catholic. I mean, they can't have, for decades now, you can't have a pro-West Virginians for life bean dinner around here without Joe standing there with his plate in his hand talking about the little fetuses. So it wasn't a departure for him. It's not like he behaved fraudulently, Carol. He wasn't elected on the I'll protect a woman's right to choose platform because that way lies electoral failure. The women, the vast majority of women in this state hate their own vergandas and want a man to control it. But yeah, it's kind of sad. But it was just another on a long list. Kind of like when he helped scuttle the nomination of a very, very capable nominee for the Civil Rights Division of the Department of Justice because the man who of course was wrong colored had the temerity to write a brief in support of Mumia Abu-Jamal. We can't have that in the new United States government. But that's all gone now because Joe's busy having a hissy over Obama trying to destroy Appalachia.
Well, somebody beat Obama to it.
Well, you say take a damn number, Barry. I mean, but Paul Krugman had an article the other day in which he said, you know what, sometimes you have to have economic upheaval in certain regions because life moves on and things change. And that's what it really does boil down to. Appalachia is not going to go willingly into the 21st century or perhaps even the 20th, Carol. We are going to have to be dragged kicking and screaming.
You know, when the mountains are gone and the people are all dead and the water's all poisoned and the coal is all gone, then what?
None of which is very far off. I mean, you may have heard on the Green News Report there at the beginning of the program, or at the top of the second hour, Alpha Natural Resources, who bought Massey Energy, you know, Don Blankenship, they're declaring bankruptcy. So that means they're going to screw their pensioners, they're going to screw their workers, they're going to screw, and yet in the press release for it was also the statement, during debtor-in-possession proceedings, the executive team at Alpha will remain in place. That means they're going to keep getting paid. The checks will keep flowing to them.
Yep.
And they flow out of little tiny hollers in Appalachia all the way to Alpha headquarters in Kevin Crutchfield's bank account.
When's Blankenship supposed to go on trial?
October. It was like April, then it was July, and now it's October. And he is his lawyer has filed what is called a motion in limine, which is a motion to keep something from being mentioned or discussed. Mm-hmm. A motion in limine to prevent anyone in the trial from even referring to the upper big branch explosion.
Wait.
What you talking about, Willis? Yeah, I know.
What is he being tried for?
Well, he's being tried for a sort of scheme, conspiracy, ongoing acts to defeat or get around or work over or ignore mine safety regulations.
Directly relating to the 29 murders?
Directly resulted in the, yes.
Oh, holy fuck.
So it'll be interesting. I haven't seen.
That's like trying a man for rape, but not
being able to mention
the word rape can't be uttered.
Well, or not being able to mention the victim. It's exactly what it's like.
Okay, that does it.
I haven't seen
time to find what I did with the rest of that bottle of peach wine. It's here somewhere.
Ooh, with the jalapenos in it, I can tell you, it's feisty.
No, honey, I sent you the one with the jalapenos.
Oh, I thought there were two.
No, mine's just straight peach wine. And it'll knock you on your butt, because I'll tell you what, I don't know how he fermented that, but...
With a vengeance?
Yeah, have you opened that bottle yet?
Oh, yeah.
And?
I just said, it's feisty.
It's feisty. Yeah.
I never thought of peach and jalapeno. Now, once upon a time, I made some mead, and I used peach and whole cloves in the fermentation. And it had this lovely peachy flavor, and it was 14% alcohol, and it numbed your mouth. And you could get where you were going in a real hurry with that stuff. And you get there almost as quick, although with a little bit of screaming involved with the jalapeno peach.
We should send a case of that to all the Republican presidential candidates.
By the way, I am told by... Ron in Canada, that we have passed a seminal moment here on the Horn.
What is it?
It ain't every day you hear Carol Baker speechless. What? What? Yeah.
None of it was computing. I'm sitting there going, he's being tried for bypassing safety measures that directly resulted in the death of 29 people, but you can't mention the 29 dead people. That's insane.
And the funny thing is, it's not a foregone conclusion that the judge will just look at that motion and go, shut up! It's not. And okay. And here's the fun part. If she rules that, if she overrules the motion, then the lawyer necessarily says, Your Honor, I object. And the judge says, noted. And if there's a conviction, then that's one of the things that goes up on the appeal as a reason to overturn the trial.
There's
ain't justice fun?
Not if you're poor. Not if you're the wrong colored.
Oh, by the way, I have to go back to that loathsome new word we've learned. You remember Chuck Johnson, Chuck C. Johnson?
Oh, yeah, the guy who got banned from Twitter for being, you know.
Chuck C. Johnson, yes.
Chuck C. Johnson.
he has embraced the term. It's about the fake, phony conservatives who enjoy watching the real fighters on the right get sodomized while they gleefully gawk. They crave respectability over power. And the limelight over influence. Seldom paid for their performances on Fox News or MSNBC, they repeat conventional wisdom after getting gussied up. But you can't polish a soul. So that's the kind of folks who are behind T-Rump.
Yikes.
Who fantasize that everybody who isn't as ignorant and bigoted as him is just like a man who wants to have his watch his wife have a husband who wants to watch his wife have sex.
Oh, me.
Brain bleach. Yeah.
What a pity. I don't know.
So I don't.
You can't fix stupid.
I guess legally we can't rebroadcast the debate on Thursday. So I reckon we'll all sort of be watching it in the background or alongside and updating each other on what exactly is good. I don't trust T. Rump at all. I don't expect him to behave himself. You heard he said, well, I only said those things because other people said nasty things about me. Because that's politics in America. It's all just playground. Yeah.
I don't know where this all ends. I don't know where it... deeply it can devolve into until we just all just kill each other.
Well, at least Chris Christie apologized for wanting to punch teachers in the face.
No, he didn't.
Oh, he didn't?
He was kidding.
Oh, it was a non-apology apology?
It wasn't even a non-apology apology.
Oh,
it wasn't even.
Have we come up with the drinking game yet for Thursday?
No, but I'll figure it out.
Okay. I mean, kind of like Hi Bob. Like, every time Trump says Mexican, you got a drink or something. I don't know.
Listen, every time he says the word I.
Well, damn, we'll be drunk in the first 15 minutes of the program.
It'll make it so much easier to get through then, won't it?
Yeah. Oh, a couple of things, though, before. There's just so many fun things to talk about with you.
Yes.
You know, today, and I had no idea the convention was having its convention. Today, Jebya went and remember when he gave the commencement address at Jerry Falwell University, and we couldn't help noticing that the applause was kind of
tepid.
Yeah. Well, he went to the Southern Baptist Convention's convention today. You got your hockey puck? The next president should defund Planned Parenthood. The argument against this is, well, women's health issues. You're attacking. It's a war on women, and you're attacking women's health issues. You could take dollar for dollar, although I'm not sure we need $500 million for women's health issues. But if you took dollar for dollar, there are many extraordinary fine organizations, community health organizations, that exist to provide quality care for women on a wide variety of health issues. But abortion should not be funded by the government, any government, in my mind. I'm not sure we need $500 million for women's health issues.
I am.
I'm pretty sure it should be around $1 billion.
And that would still be a shortfall. And has he never heard of the Hyde Amendment?
He's talking to the Baptist, Carol.
Have they never heard of the Hyde Amendment?
No. No, 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 no. The Southern Baptists think that there are welfare queens out there who just get pregnant every other day so they can go and get a free Obamacare abortion.
Okay, well, so we trash an organization where 97% of what they do has absolutely nothing to do with an abortion, and we kill that 97% to not pay for what we're already not paying for.
I think you've got it.
Okay, now that that's clear.
Yeah. By the way, Hillary Clinton responded to those odious remarks, and I mean she really gave it to him, too. I'm so proud of her. You are absolutely unequivocally wrong. That's what she tweeted.
Wow. That must have stung.
She's sure going to give him hell out on the general election campaign trail, isn't she?
That wasn't even giving him heck.
You're absolutely unequivocally wrong.
Yikes.
I'll tell you what, she's sure fighting for a woman's right to choose there.
Yeah. But you see, that's why I'm not allowed to run for public office, Bob.
Or do radio on terrestrial radio without a profanity delay.
Without a Baker delay.
Yeah, the Baker delay, exactly. Although I don't know, we got to work the angry Indian in there somewhere in the delay too.
I thought about that. The angry Baker delay.
Yeah, the angry Baker Indian delay. Or we could just call it the fuck machine. or the no fuck machine. I don't.
Well, you can't say fuck machine.
Oh God, and thank you since I have you live on the program. Thank you for getting us started on the fundraising drive, the
Oh, it was absolutely my pleasure. I wanted to prime the pump there. That's why I wanted to...
Oh, you were buying naming rights, and you know it.
Yeah, damn right I was.
No.
Donald Trump isn't the only narcissist. But listen...
It's been a lovely conversation. I'm
play with our other friends, buddy.
All right. Let's see who else wants to chat on this here Titanic Tuesday.
There you go. All right. Thanks so much, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right. You keep them honest down there in Hooterville. You hear me?
I will. And thank you for not saying go eat a shit sandwich during this conversation.
I'm so proud. Later.
Especially when I mentioned Joe Manchin, the liberal one.
No, see, that just got... I was raised right.
Yes, you were. Well, in that nice.
Exactly.
Bye. All right, later, Gator.
The one and only Carol Baker, live from Hooterville. And I'm headed over to the phones again in a second. Note coming in from Luda, subject line equipment. On the res, we call it running on Indian time. Indeed. All right, let's go to the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Yeah, can you hear me okay?
I got you, John.
Cool. The answer to your question is that Gilmore is a former governor of Virginia.
Oh, yes, that's right. See, I was confused. I was also thinking about Gilmore Girls, the TV program.
No, he was a kind of a low-bulb luminary of Virginia for his time.
He's Virginia's entry into the program, given the fact that Bob McDonald is doing federal time now.
Yeah, well...
Because back before he got popped for taking cheesy little bribes, you know, he was presidential timber.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there was active talk about if not presidential, at least vice presidential. But, the template was that O'Donnell would become, you know, president or vice president. Cuccinelli would get his little round at the Virginia governorship. And then when the McDonald's was done, he'd pass the baton over to Cuccinelli and then, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
What does it say that I, who am trying to pay at least a little bit of attention to this process, John, didn't even know Jim Gilmore had gotten into the race, and then couldn't remember who Jim Gilmore was?
Well, I've come to believe, and this is my personal opinion, you can stick me in the fork or whatever, back to bacon, but, I truly believe that the way that the races are set up now and how the financing is set up, I truly believe that a lot of these guys, they're not, I don't really think they truly think they're going to win. I think they're in it just for the freaking money. To get the mailing list, to get the, you know, do the Hutch Street thing. Get the mailing list, get the, you know, the contact list and the emails and all that stuff so they can then sell that crap off to, you know, make money later on. And, you know, get, you know, drive their name, maybe get a book deal or maybe get another show on Fox or whatever. I don't think that a lot of these lower tier people, I don't really truly believe that they actually think they're going to win. I mean, Carly Fiorina, you know, I listened to a small chunk of her little speech thing, and you know, to hear her tell it, you know, she, you know, climbed a hill both ways up, used a notebook to kill a grizzly bear, and she started out as a secretary and became the president of the, or CEO of the world's largest tech company, blah, 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 which if you actually go back and look at it, she damn near run that company to the ground.
Well, and damn near is being pretty generous.
Yeah, well, I'm a generous kind of guy. And, you see what's happening now with Hillary Clinton. I truly believe that this particular race is being run by the media. You got Fox News and their debate thing going on.
Well, let's get all Latin. Cui bono, you know? Who?
Yeah, the media is becoming the kingmakers. And there's a thing going on. There's a meme churning around right now that that Hillary Clinton, and they're talking about Joe Biden and stuff, because they're saying there's some kind of, I'll call it a whisper campaign. I don't know what to call it officially, but there's been a lot of focus on Hillary Clinton's so-called negatives. All this fancy polling stuff is being done, but they're coaching the questions in such a way as to say, well, you know, what her negatives are like, and her negatives are out, you know, she has a negative rating that's even below Sanders, and and that's what's causing, you know, the whole Joe Biden thing, because he's so well liked and everything. And I'm going, you know, this is so much like the media. They want the horse race so bad that they will tear down a candidate just to make it possible for somebody else to
come
in.
Well, just at this point in time, they're far more interested in the controversy than they are in substance.
Yeah, like it's like the debate is coming up. They're saying that this is going to be the biggest ratings kill off in a long time. And if you stop to think about it for a minute, here is, clown car or not, this is one of the parts of the steps that we would take to elect a president of the United States, leader of the quote-unquote free world. And it has been turned into, you know, as much as we talk joke about clown cars and all that, that's what it is. We've turned one of the most sacred things of American, one of the things that supposedly makes us a great country, and we've turned it into a freaking reality show. That, you know, it's going to be, you know, it wouldn't surprise me. In fact, I'm waiting for it. Somewhere along the line, Trump's going to bring out his, you're fired, his signature line, somewhere in the debate that's going to come out.
I think he's keeping his powder dry on that one. I thought about that, John. I think he's keeping that one until he's the nominee.
Yeah. I'm not even sure he even thinks.
Because that's one you can only use once. And
yeah. And I mean, when you really think about it, you know, this was me. Maybe he is arrogant enough to crazy enough to think he can, but, you know, if you're a freaking billionaire, no matter if it's $2 billion or $9 billion, stop and think about it for a minute. Do you really want all the pomp and ceremony and all the stress and all the... And look at Obama. He goes in... I mean, presidents do this all the time now. They go in, they've got nice dark hair, they got young features. 8 years later, they come out, and they look like they've been rode hard and put up wet.
But that's only if they take the job seriously. 4 years turned Jimmy Carter into an old man. 8 years did the same to Bill Clinton, and it's doing the same thing to Barack Obama. Ronald Reagan looked younger coming out than he did going in. And Dim Leader put on his footy pajamas and got his bath and put on his footy pajamas and went to bed by 9:30 every night. Bill Clinton was famous for getting 4 hours of sleep because he'd be down at midnight and up at 4, because the guy just loved policy. Right or wrong, he was into what he was doing. Now, if Trump takes it seriously, the White House, 4 years, after his first 4 years, he's going to look like Dr. Evil.
Oh, that's a scary thought.
But yeah. I don't expect him to.
Oh no, I don't either.
Because he's part of that mindset that thinks you can, and how many times have you heard it, John? Run the government like a business. Remember when Dim Leader said he wanted to run the United States like Enron?
Yeah, what happened to Enron?
He did.
You know, these guys have no conception about, you know, we're entering an age where, you know, one person can sit behind the machine and do the productivity of 10 workers, and the biggest question we have going on right now is what to do with the other 9 people that are not going to have a damn job. And yet we've got this guy who made his living, you know, yeah, he's a real estate developer. But anybody who knows anything about real estate knows that you finance the hell out of it, and you duck into bankruptcy every 6 months to get out from under it. You know? This guy, you know, it scares the hell out of me that somebody with his attitude would be anywhere near that red button. No, can't have it. No, not good. But anyway, it's getting close there, so we'll let you go so you can fiddle up some more people and close your show out. Very interesting today.
Oh, I thought, and wasn't Dr. Bill just on fire?
Oh, man, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the hell out of it. I was hoping I didn't take it too far off the line.
But, no. He was tickled. He thought it worked perfectly into the theme of the program.
Yeah, because, it always remarks me that so many people kind of forget that, you know, for all the lionizing of the founders and all the, you know, and all the wonderful history and everything, is that, you know, there's a lot of stuff that goes on in the background that most of the ordinary folks just don't really see. It's not a conspiracy theory. It's just kind of how the machinery works, you know. And, you know, the poor folk that are out there getting slugged on and getting their mountaintops blown off and, you know, their water burning and everything else, you know, so many of them are so busy trying to live their lives that so much of the stuff just goes by them. They don't have the time, they don't have the energy, they don't have the education. And that's why Dr. Bill's program is kind of important, because, you know, it gives them a tiny opportunity to, you know, get a little glimmer of that, of both the founding of the country and also how it relates to the world today. And it's a fascinating thing. And you can always,
well, very,
you know,
very well said, and that's concurrent with something I was thinking about the other day. I was having a discussion on Facebook with some folks, and, you know, we weren't arguing or being mean to each other or anything, but I was trying to defend my position that I refuse to let anybody call me an environmentalist, because I see environmentalism as a sort of parlor game that's played by wealthy people with lots of free time to spare. And I'm sure that there are friends and colleagues of mine who would take issue with that.
Yeah.
But I think there's an element of truth in it. And
yeah.
And what I'm getting at is that as long as an issue gets ghettoized, for lack of a better term, you know, women's rights, environmentalism, labor, it's one thing to refer to these things as such, but the people who work on them get pigeonholed, and I find it to be a form of oppression. Whereas, on the other hand, if you take Mr. and Mr. America, or Ms. and Ms. America, or Mr. and Mrs. America, who are daily struggling to stay alive in this incredibly brutal country, John,
mm-hmm.
They don't have time for parlor games. And, you know, maybe you're a union household, so therefore you're into labor issues because they're coming after your paycheck. Or maybe you're a newly married gay couple, and that issue means something to you because it touches your everyday life. That's the measure, though. It touches one's everyday life. And until such time as the environment touches everyday lives, or people are made to understand that it touches everyday lives, it's going nowhere. I mean, we can work on it from a policy standpoint or a political standpoint, but and this is I think a uniquely American phenomenon. I think people in other parts of the so-called developed world think about this more than we do. But it's a real problem in this country.
Well, sure. I mean, think about it. The whole New Deal thing and all of those things that were done by Roosevelt, stuff were only possible after the 29 crash, when there was a political and social opportunity to do these things, because otherwise it would have never flown. And, you know, that's the way Americans are. It's the way most people are. You know, Republicans more so than Democrats, because Republicans, oh, they can be anti-abortion, anti-gay, anti-whatever the hell, until it hits somebody that they actually have a personal connection with.
Well, right. Rich white families in Mississippi never have to worry about what they're going to do with Precious Pumpkin's little problem. They'll just put her on a plane, and they'll take a family vacation to California or shopping in New York City. And Precious Pumpkin will come home, and she won't have that problem anymore. When women's health rights are assaulted, one of the fundamental mistakes many people make is by not understanding that it's not just a health care access, but that it is also specifically and particularly, John, a poverty issue. Because you know what? If you're working poor in Mississippi, you can't get on that plane and go and do a little shopping at Bloomingdale's and Saks and Barney's and whatever. And, by the way, get your uterus scraped. You can't do that.
Oh yeah.
So nobody in the anti-women's reproductive health care access movement, nobody thinks that they're ever going to make it illegal nationwide. Because they know they're always going to need somewhere to take their privileged little fetuses to get aborted.
Yep. Well, that's the truth of it. Without a doubt.
And I hope I'm not putting it in offensive terms for anybody, but I think it's pretty plain that that's what the case is.
Oh, it's without a doubt. I mean, it's not even so much selfishness or anything else. It's just the real, solid core reality that for so many people, they can't invest the emotional energy to deal with an issue that doesn't affect them. If some family's, homestead / farm up in North Dakota, guy turns on his freaking water and it smells like gas and he happens to be smoking a cigarette and his damn water catches on fire. Well, somebody living down in Oklahoma doesn't give a damn about that. Especially if he's got money. He doesn't care. It doesn't bother him. He just knows he's got cheap gas. So, you can plug that in however you wish. I'll let you go.
All right, John, you have yourself a good evening. And thanks for helping out. I appreciate it. Bye now.
Bye.
John calling from out in the Wild West. President Obama even touched on the question of how things affect people's lives in regard to the power plant regs. He gave a speech about it, and he said they, meaning the Joe Manchins and Mitch McConnells of the world and the Shelley Moore Capitos and et cetera, will claim this is a war on coal to scare up votes, even as they ignore my plan to actually invest in revitalizing coal country and supporting those workers and supporting health care and retirement for coal miners and their families and retraining those workers for better-paying jobs and healthier jobs. Communities across America have been losing coal jobs for decades. I want to work with Congress to help them, not to use them as political footballs. Partisan press releases aren't going to help those families. Enter the United Mine Workers of America. August 3rd, 2015, Dateline, Triangle, Virginia. United Mine Workers of America International President Cecil E. Roberts issued the following statement today. We are reviewing the fine print of the rule issued today by the Environmental Protection Agency so that we can fully understand what its impact will be on our members, their jobs, their retirement benefits, and their communities. The draft rule of the EPA proposed last year put a terrible burden on coal miners and their communities, especially those in Appalachia. From all accounts that have been published so far, the final rule is even worse. It's hard to draw any other conclusion than this. The people who will suffer the most from this rule are working and retired coal miners and their families, primarily in Appalachia. These hard-working miners have given their health, their limbs, and far too often their lives to create the foundation of the America we live in today. We cannot solve global climate change on their backs. They deserve much better than the fate this rule has in store for them.
We will have more to say about this in coming days, but I can assure our members today that with both of them, that we will take every possible step to fight for their jobs, their pensions, their health care, and their future against that Negro in the White House that even though the United Mine Workers has endorsed the Democrat in every presidential election since God was a baby, we couldn't find a way to endorse in 2012. Thank you for your support.
Okay, I added the last part. But the endorsement part is true. Now, see, Cecil has a different interest from, and I'm not being anti-labor here. I'm as pro-labor as the day is long, but nobody gets a pass. When you're up, you're up. Cecil does not have a commonality of interest with his rank and file. Cecil's interest is making sure that his $500,000 a year job and his very, very nice lifestyle in the suburbs of Washington, D.C., which ain't nowhere near coal country, and he wouldn't live back here if you paid him twice as much to do it. Well, that's Cecil's interest. The interest of the scant few people that the union still represents in this state and in this region is more along the lines of, holy hell, how are we going to make the mortgage payment? Are they going to repo the car? I thought we were going to send the babies to college. I guess so much for eating meat five times a week. And Cecil has about as much in common with them as a cat does with a catamaran. But instead of saying, because they could have, because see, this is the thing. Barack Obama's administration really did put out a multi-billion dollar, for all intents and purposes, Marshall Plan for Appalachia. Congress promptly ignored it and continues so to do. But it really would make a difference here. Cecil says he's worried about his active miners, hard-working miners, because they're all hard-working miners. There's no loafers out there. And the retirees. And the retirees I really do feel for because they're taking it on the chin. Not much mention in there of the future, though, is there? Joe Manchin doesn't talk. Well, Joe Manchin mentioned the future once. He said maybe in 100 years or so from now, solar energy will be the fuel of the future. Future, future, future. But until then, we'll need coal. Oh, yes, I remember that well. I think I've still got bruises from Agnes's fingers digging into the flesh of my arm trying to keep me in the seat. But this, you know, this region doesn't have a present problem as much as it does have a future problem, and nobody's working on it. I mean, it, certainly Joe Manchin isn't working on it. Shelley Moore isn't working on it. That loony from the Eastern Panhandle, Mooney, I'm sorry, and McKinley, they're not working on it. Evan Jenkins, Hal Rogers, who's been in Congress since God was a baby, isn't working on it. Same thing's going to happen in Appalachia that happens every time there's an economic collapse and the coal industry walks out. We're going to be left to fend for ourselves. Catch as catch can and make do. And then in another 10 years or so, some photographers will show up down here to capture images of the poverty that is Appalachia. Or maybe some weasel from National Review will come down and write about women using their food stamps to buy black market Pepsi. And there doesn't seem to be a way. And frankly, the well got poisoned a long time ago. Do not knock on doors in Appalachia and say, pardon me, do you have a few minutes for me to talk to you about the environment? Can't you see I got kids to feed? And that's what I'm talking about. That's the issue. Issues are things that are only interesting to people who are paid to be interested by them, unless they are touching people every day in their homes and in their communities. And because our side does such a butt-rotten job, and not that, no, maybe it's not that we do a bad job, it's that there are just so damn few of us. We can't seem to reach a whole lot of people, a very noisy plurality in this country, and say, listen, life expectancy is declining in the United States. That means your kids and grandkids won't live as long as you do. If you would like to reverse that trend, we need to do something about coal-fired electricity. We need to do something about mountaintop removal. We need to do something. Because it's poisoning your children and your grandchildren. And see what I just did? I said all of that and never said climate change. Because it's real. You and I know it's real. Barack Obama was right. We are living it. We're the first generation that's really, really living it within written down history. Now, you can go out into the Southwest and you can go to Chaco Canyon and you can look at the real world impacts of climate change. Or you can go to the jungles of Central America and look at the vine-covered, well, some have been uncovered and they're tourist sites now, World Heritage Sites, I think is the proper term, pyramids. And you can see the real-world effects of climate change. Because those peoples heedlessly participated within a changing climate. They continued to live as they had always lived, and the next thing you know, the cities were abandoned. Calakmul, Chichen Itza, Palenque, Copan, none of which were actually the names, well, maybe Chichen Itza, maybe Calakmul, but mostly we just name them stuff because what they called themselves has been forgotten, or what they called them has been forgotten. And suddenly, we're back into the very first story of the evening. When somebody hollers, "Speak English!" Oblivious to the fact that in that little hate-filled, ignorant phrase, they're making an unintended reference, to which they are oblivious, to genocide. And there you go. Yeah, Devin's got it. You can try to grow food in West Virginia and see the real-world effects of climate change. I can't tell you, because, you know, I get real worked up about fresh tomatoes. I can't... I can't tell you how many people I've talked to about their gardens. My tomatoes didn't do a damn this year. All it done was rain. They rot, the roots rotted in the ground, or they blighted. And interestingly, we're talking about tomato plants that are supposed to be blight resistant. Yeah. So it's time to get out of here. Thank you, everyone, for your time. We added $45 to the equipment fund. We raised absolutely nothing in terms of just evening maintenance or regular, you know, keeping the lights on maintenance. So maybe there's a dynamic tension between the two. Whichever you prefer to participate in, if you're listening to this in delay, or if you're listening now, you are heartily encouraged so to do, to help keep this little community going. And even where the equipment's concerned, perhaps, as Harry pointed out, expand it. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky and Lottie in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you to John Fox and Ben Birch. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACACT, ACHEACT.org. And always, 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 Gina. And the music doesn't work. It's all for you. Good night, y'all.